This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Jock takes it to the net. Save made with the Lapette. Score! Connor Hellebuck got a piece of it, and no one in a white jersey could clear it before David Kemp came in and tapped it in.
Back toward the line for Slavin, near side, Teravainen. He let a shot go and scores. It beat Hellebuck to the top far side corner. It's a power play goal for Carolina. They lead it 2-0.
Jones will play it up on the right side. Bjorkstrand gets away from Kulikov, scores! Oliver Bjorkstrand has another as he gets around Dmitry Kulikov and finds the top part of the net.
Courtesy producer Sean Assor, a montage of goals from the Winnipeg Jets' most recent three-game road trip. We know that that three-game road trip was not a success. The Jets losing all three games, dropping to 5-11-2 in their last 18 games. That's tied for 29th place in the NHL in terms of points percentage over that time. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. It's the All-Star break, but it's no All-Star break for us. We're all about the Winnipeg Jets. We'll touch on what's happening in St. Louis at the All-Star game as well. And in hour number three, you can start preparing your calls now. In hour number three, we don't do it often. We're going to take your phone calls, 204-780-1290. Start to think about what you want to give us a call about. That's not until starting at 11:15 this morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, nice to see you on this Saturday morning. It's been a couple weeks. I was away last week. Thank you for filling in for me, gentlemen.
How was the trip?
You both. Trip was lovely. Had a very nice time. You know, my bye week, my all-star break, as it were. Had a lovely time with my kids and my parents and, enjoyed some nice warmer weather, although it's pretty nice in Winnipeg, coming back to some nice weather.
Going up to zero next week, so.
Yeah, I'm quite okay with that kind of temperature. It was nice of them to not have it be the deep freeze when I arrived home late last night.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. You know, got a little, as you mentioned, it's all-star break time. I thought last night was one of the best skills competitions I've seen in a while, and I think a lot of it has to do with that elite women's 3-on-3 game, guys. But, you know, you had a new winner in the fastest skater. Obviously, Shea Weber wins the hardest shot again. I actually didn't mind the last competition where you had the players shooting at the targets from in the crowd. You had Brett Hall come out. And how cool was it when Al MacInnis brought out the old Sherwood and had a 100-mile-per-hour shot? I think it was actually more than 100 miles. I think it was 104, if I'm not mistaken. So I liked how they brought out Al MacInnis and Hall, I mentioned, Wayne Gretzky, Bernie Federko. So I thought they did an awesome job last night. And, you know, the All-Star game later today is obviously, you know, for me, isn't as big. I like watching the skills more. But I thought they did just a fantastic job last night.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. Admittedly, I didn't watch any of it. I was on a plane, but, you know, it's nice to see them at least trying to do some different things. I'm watching the highlights were in studio of the target shooting or the platform where they shot on, and somebody called it Top Golf for hockey. And that's very apropos. And it looked fun. And so good on the NHL, good on the All-Stars for participating and trying some different things, because it certainly had been getting a little dull when they do the same things over and over. And they got rid of those miniature nets where the players always looked embarrassed.
Yeah, they don't have that anymore. Okay. And, you know, we mentioned, I don't think you're ever going to do away with, you know, the shot streak, the hardest shot, the fastest skater. But, yeah, why not try something new? And I like how the men and the women were combined in that last event, right?
Yeah.
And the elite women's 3-on-3 game, hopefully that's something that we see every year. Like, hopefully, you know, it's a little bit longer and, you know, we can talk about this a little bit later. But, you know, it's just great for the women's game with the uncertainty, you know, of the female pro league. We expect that to happen, you know, at some point in the near future, hopefully. You know, it's within the next year, but, you know, that was just such a great showcase for female hockey, and obviously didn't hurt that Canada won.
And unfortunately for Winnipeg Jets fans, it hasn't been a great showcase for the Jets' talents on ice as of late. As I mentioned, they drop all three games on that road trip. I guess the mothers aren't going to be invited back anytime soon after that performance, but this Jets team continues to struggle. And, you know, throughout earlier in the season, when they were playing well and they had a good record, everybody said, yes, but their underlying numbers. And yes, but their underlying numbers. Well, their underlying numbers have come home to roost, as the saying goes. They right now are performing like one of the worst teams in the league, which is what the underlying numbers would say that they are, is one of the worst teams in the league. How did you guys see that three-game road trip? I mean, we know that you know, there was the game at home in Tampa Bay that was obviously a disaster. Then they go out on the road on the Sunday to play the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks, again, a second game of a back-to-back for them, and the Blackhawks are the better team. Tuesday and Wednesday, you could say the Jets' performance was better than it was Friday and Sunday. But that, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, 0 points in the points column.
Yeah, I can only speak for myself, but I didn't like the game Tuesday against Carolina at all, especially the third period. I mean, that was a pretty poor effort in the third period for the Jets. So for me, the game against Columbus was by far the Jets' best game, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Jets led, what was it, three different times,
yep.
Right? And, you know, that goal by Oliver Bjorkstrand in the third period, you know, that's just a killer, right? Because you mentioned the game against Tampa Bay, I would argue that was probably the Jets' worst game of the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were on the radio last weekend talking about it, breaking down, you know, the Cirelli hat trick and the Kucherov goals and all that. But, you know, the game against Chicago wasn't much better.
Nope.
I mean, Patrick Kane basically said, like, you're not going to ruin my 1,000 point night, right? And, you know, the game against Carolina, look, Carolina's a very good team. Carolina's probably going to be a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. It's not going to be, you know, maybe as easy as some people thought for them, but you know, we saw them not too long ago absolutely pump the Jets at Bell MTS Place, right? And you know, I just didn't think the Jets were able to put together anything close to three periods, whereas against Columbus, that was a full team effort. Like, the Jets were in that game. They should have got at least a point in that game. At least a point, if not two. And yes, Columbus is playing really well, but you know, coming into that game, Merzlikins was basically unbeatable, mm-hmm. right? He had three shutouts in his last four or five games, and the Jets got to him early, right? Like Mason Appleton, you know, it was nice for him to only, you know, get his second goal of the year. He was playing well. You know, I thought the Scheifele line was really good. Line A was playing really well. Like, the Jets were in that game, and not only in that game, they were winning that game, not just the leads, but, you know, if you want to look at it, you know, more from the advanced stats point of view, like possession, zone time, all of that.
Game flow.
That was the one game, I think, where you could say the Jets deserve those 2 points. But when you're talking about Carolina and Chicago, I mean, they didn't deserve any points in those games, as far as I'm concerned. Like, they didn't play well. And yeah, we know that, you know, the advanced stats don't flatter the Jets when you talk about, you know, expected goals, high danger chances for, high danger chances against.
Yeah, and none of the advanced stats flatter the Jets.
You could just end it as none.
Yeah, and this is a big problem, guys, because, you know, you're battling with the likes of Vegas. You're battling with the likes of Chicago, believe it or not. You're battling with, you know, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver. Like, the Jets are going to be in a dogfight with five or six teams to make the playoffs. So they have to write this
shit. Hang on, let me stop you right there, because I'm not sure that they are going to be in that dogfight if things don't change quickly. And by things, I mean the roster. Because you've gotten as far as you can with the players that you have in the lineup. And, you know, it's clear that there's no Dustin Byfuglien. Dustin Byfuglien's not going to swoop onto the scene at any point in time in the season and you know, rejuvenate the team's chances.
Well, he's not skating, so I don't understand how you can swoop in and come back if we're in late January. Like, we're almost into February now, and Buff isn't skating. So unless Buff starts skating, you know, in the next couple of weeks, like, how do you come back in mid to late February if you haven't been on skates in months?
I think we can stop talking about him as a factor on the ice this season. He's not going to come back. He's not going to
You can't say emphatically because you don't know that.
Fine, my opinion, but you're right, Dave. You can't say without a shadow of a doubt. But I'd be stunned at this point in time. So the Jets roster, as currently constructed, and right, largely on the back end, is just not good enough to get it done. So I don't think this team, 6 weeks from now or 8 weeks from now, barring something tremendously unforeseen or Connor Hellebuyck going absolutely lights out like he was earlier this year, this team's not going to be anywhere near sniffing a playoff spot. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. We just, you know, an 18-game sample isn't a small sample size.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jets just right now are a bottom-feeding team in the NHL. It's hard to believe given the talent they have up front and the performance of Connor Hellebuyck in net. But right now, they tell me why they're not a bottom five NHL team.
Well, it's interesting because I was listening to Marat and he was talking about how since December, the Jets, I think, are 30th in terms of winning percentage.
Yeah.
The only team they're ahead of.
Detroit.
Is Detroit.
Yeah.
So who, didn't they beat them a couple of times already this season? So, you know, I mean, it's.
Just once.
Yeah, just, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's one of those situations where you're thinking to yourself, okay, since this, that point, your winning percentage is that low, right? Now, obviously, you have to factor in the injuries. But other teams, look at Columbus. Columbus, I think, had 10 of their regulars out of the lineup, and they were still doing it, getting it done.
And lost all their quote-unquote superstars from the season before.
Every team has injuries. That's right. Every team has injuries. Every team has, you know, and again, very similar look. So I agree with Ezzy. I thought that Columbus game was the Jets' best game of in recent memory. But, you know, at the same time, you're sitting there going, well, how are you going to start... We know you have the offense, and it becomes a question of the style of play. Mm-hmm. Is Maurice need to change the way he's using these guys? Because currently, the way you're trying to almost harness them in a defensive
shell,
exactly, and be very defensive with this group. Well, you know, maybe you need to unleash them a little, because to be honest with you, right now you've got all these horses, and they're really just not riding. So you sit there and you look at the Jets and you're thinking to yourself, okay, what Tucker Pullman was supposedly wasn't going to play the homestand, was potential to play on the road. Well, he didn't play on the road, obviously. So they don't want to take a risk. They're going to hopefully get him back and healthy. You would think after the week off of from skating
next Friday when they play the Bruins.
Let me tell you, they got to start getting good at home, because they got 10 of 11 games at Bell MTS Place starting end of January and into February.
I think it's something like
10 of 11.
I know, but I'm saying that of their 31 remaining games, 17 are home. Are at home.
Yeah. So you've got Tucker Pullman that you're thinking is going to be back. Nathan Beaulieu went out, I think it was January 2nd, and the coaching staff said he's about a month away. So you're expecting he would probably be somewhat back at, you know, sometime in February. You're going to hopefully augment your defensive group a little bit and get some of those guys back in. I'm not saying they're going to be game changers, because so far none of this team has necessarily been game changers. And, you know, we don't know what's the status of Brian Little, obviously, because he continues to skate on a fairly regular basis. But, you know, it's very tough. Like, I mean, if I'm the Jets, I you know, the expression, you know, you keep trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, you know, maybe.
Definition of insanity.
Right. And so maybe it is time for this coaching staff to say, listen, we've got these weapons in that we're not deploying in the manner in which I think they're being used. They could be used optimally. So maybe we need to change things around a little bit.
There's no doubt, guys, that, you know, getting Tucker Pullman back, getting Adam Lowry back, like you mentioned, Dave, like Pullman could be back as early as the first game against Boston after the break, right? And then Lowry's only going to be out for another, you know, couple weeks, right? Because when he went down, he was originally supposed to be out for 4 weeks. So he's not out long term. But yeah, Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien at this point, we just don't know. So you have to look at it more so in kind of like a short term type of way, right? So those guys will help, but All said, I don't agree necessarily with you, Drew, when you talk about the Jets are a bottom five team or a bottom feeder. I think since the Christmas break, since early December, yes, you know, Dave mentioned it. Like, when you talk about just points and winning percentage, the Jets are a bottom five team. But overall, based on the talent and the type of team, right, that's what I'm saying. So I don't think, you know, the Jets are only 3 points out of a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, like, there are a lot of things that concern me about this Jets team. Like, the last four games specifically, right? And, you know, like, the Jets, this is not just about four games. Like, this is not just four losses in a row. The Jets have had a bad, let's say, 15 to 20 game stretch going back to early December, right? Yeah. So even though things look really bleak right now, and, you know, then all of the numbers point to the Jets being a bottom five or bottom 10 team, the Western Conference is not as strong as it has been in previous years. So you look at that Pacific Division, guys, the difference between first and fifth is what, 2 points?
Yeah, look.
Like anybody can win the Pacific. So all I'm saying is, yes, Colorado.
1 point, to be honest.
St. Louis, yes. So Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas, I would say those are the top three teams in the Central. Mm-hmm. Even though I do think the Jets could catch Dallas, I don't think they're going to catch Colorado. And obviously St. Louis, nobody's catching them unless they go on some type of ridiculous tailspin, but they're gone. They've got first. So the Jets are still in this. Do things have to improve drastically? Yes. But, you know, you go back to how well Connor Hellebuck played in November, and what were they, 10-4-1 or something like that, 11-4-1? So I'm not saying that the Jets are going to pull off that type of run in February, but it starts with these home games coming up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, of these next four games against St. Louis twice, Boston, and Nashville, ideally you have to win all of these games. Like, two of four wins, like going 500 from here until April is not going to cut it.
Not by a long shot. When we come back, though, we'll talk about expectations for the Jets' final 31 games of the season. Still to come today on the show, we're going to be joined by Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're going to be joined by Sean Tierney to talk about the Jets' numbers from an analytics viewpoint. And remember, in hour number three, we're going to take your calls. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean, it's beyond frustrating. I mean, I'm running out of, you guys are asking the same questions, obviously, after a game. But, you know, you can answer them with a little bit of dignity after the last two games. So, you know, the Tampa and Chicago game, we didn't like one bit. And, I don't know if you can give more than we've given the last two nights.
Blake Wheeler talking about the Jets' performance after Wednesday's loss to Columbus. You can tell the frustration in the voice of the captain of the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So you heard from the Jets captain in the clip. Again, you know, to your point, the Wednesday effort against Columbus was certainly the best of recent losses for the Winnipeg Jets. They were in it right up until the third period. It reminded me a lot of the game against Boston from a few weeks ago where they were in that game in Boston back and forth, and then the Bruins scored about halfway through, I think, the third period to take a lead after the Jets had multiple one-goal leads. They were never able to hold on to the lead. Let's talk about the Jets over the final 31 games of the season. Hard to believe there's only 31 games left, that we're almost, you know, close to two-thirds of the way through this season. 17 at home, 14 on the road. We know the struggles at home. They've been well documented. They are, you know, certainly within sniffing distance of a playoff spot, given, as you mentioned last segment, that the Western Conference isn't a juggernaut this year. The Jets 3 points behind Vegas, 3 points behind Arizona. They have a game in hand on Vegas. A lot of the teams behind the Jets also have games in hand. Nashville, for example, 4 games in hand still on the Winnipeg Jets, which will be likely made up over the course of this this upcoming bye week or so. But what number of wins do the Jets need in the final 31 to be a realistic playoff team? You know, 31 games to go. How many wins do they need, Dave?
I think we talked about this last week I think we pegged it around 20.
Yeah, well, just think about what the playoff line is going to be, right, guys? Right. Like, the playoff line is going to be somewhere around 95 points, right? Like, it might be a little bit lower. It might be a little bit higher. It's definitely not going to be 100 points like it was back in 2015. Right. You remember the Jets had 99 points, and then they finished 8th in the Western Conference, right? So I would think, you know, and especially when you consider, you know, overtime or shootout losses, I imagine it's going to be somewhere between 18 and 20 wins, right? Because then you're talking about around 40 points.
That's right. That's
right.
Yeah.
So if you have 19 wins and then you have 2 or 3 or whatever overtime shootout losses, that gets you your 40 points. So, I mean, obviously we don't know the exact number, but you know, it goes back to what we were saying last segment. I mean, the Jets are going to have to be much better than 500. And even though you have all these home games coming up, and you've got some tough games against St. Louis and Boston and Nashville, the schedule gets a lot easier in February. Like, you've got Ottawa twice. You've got
the Rangers.
I think Chicago twice. Mm-hmm. You've got the California teams that are out of the playoffs, right? Yeah, you mentioned the Rangers. Like, you've got the Kings. You've got the Sharks. Like, even though you have a lot of playoff teams coming up in the next, like we said, 4 games, the next week after the All-Star and player break, the schedule does get easier. You're at home. So that's when you obviously have to pick up, you know, a clean 2 points in all of those games. But
what
I
evidence
think towards the end of the month, you know, they have the back to back with Washington at the end of February. Like, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, guys. Like, in the very short term, obviously, you know, the Jets are off for the next week, but you have to come out of the break with a win against, in my opinion, you got to beat Boston because you have to end the losing streak. You have to stop the bleeding. You have to win games against St. Louis, even though St. Louis is
not. What evidence do you have that this Jets team can go on a roll? What optimism let's play it out. You're a diehard Jets fan. Whomever is listening is a diehard Jets fan, and
I would imagine they probably are if they're listening to the show.
Fair enough. And they want optimism. Where are you pointing to that optimism to give them hope that this Jets team is going to turn things around and rectify the recent slump?
We talked about this last segment. Like, the Jets were a top tier team in November. Now, Drew, that's 1 month. Like, we're talking about one of 4 months, right? Because we've played four full months of hockey, basically. Like, we will have one game left in January, but 4 months. So you've had one good month, because remember, October, the Jets were a 500 team.
Very much so. What was
their record? 6-7, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, the Jets have had one good month. Like, to have a good month, you've got to have a winning percentage of at least 60%, right? And hopefully better. And then obviously in November, it was much better. But I think if you're looking for one thing, it's because you know that the Jets have played at that level for a very short period of time. Now, even though I consider myself someone that's very optimistic about the Jets, as I mentioned last segment, like, there's a lot of things that concern me that I think the Jets might not be able to turn this around. And the schedule that they have coming out of the break is not helping things. Like, it would be nice to have, you know, Ottawa and New Jersey and San Jose and some kind of bottom feeders coming out of the break, but they have Boston, they have St. Louis, they have Nashville. Nashville obviously is chasing the Jets as well. They're a few points back, but I mean, there is no one reason I can give you. Like, this is going to be tough. It's going to be tough for the Jets to get into the playoffs. They put themselves ahead of the horse in November, and now they've fallen back behind. Like, they have allowed a lot of other teams. Like, look at Colorado. Colorado was not doing well. They've started to pick it up, but, like, Colorado was giving the Jets an opportunity to kind of pull a little bit ahead of them and Dallas. Now, Dallas and Colorado are ahead of the Jets, and those other teams, like we talked about, Chicago, Minnesota, Nashville. I know most of us don't think Minnesota is going to make it at this point, but I don't think you can count Chicago or Nashville out.
Well, of course,
they're right there.
Chicago's tied with the Jets. Minnesota's
2 points back.
And Minnesota's 2 points back with the game in hand, and Nashville's 3 points back with four games in hand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Jets can't think of themselves as home and clear from anybody in the Central Division, particularly so based on the number of points they've been getting as of late, because they haven't been getting any points, Dave.
But that was my point, that in December, that was an opportunity when all of these other teams were struggling. They were also struggling. And that's why I was saying the West, like, to me, the Eastern Conference is much better this year. And obviously, you know, the Eastern Conference, you know, has produced, you know, a lot of the Stanley Cup champions as of late, you know, with Pittsburgh and Washington. But if you look at that Atlantic division, like, that Atlantic division to me is really good. The Metro is also very good. I know the Pacific is just anybody's race right now, right? Like, there's no team that you could say is the front runner. I still think Vegas is going to end up, you know, winning that division, but, you know, that's just completely based on maybe at this point,
reputation.
Yeah, basically, you know, talent. But, you know, the Jets are going to have to get it done at home, and they're going to have to get it done early. Like, you can't come out of the break, guys, and lose a couple of games. Like, you don't have that luxury anymore. You have to claw and fight now for every point. And yes, it's going to be tough because Boston is one of the best teams in the league, not just the Eastern Conference. So, you know, I can't just tell you, well, you know, Connor Hellebuck's going to get four shutouts and, you know, Patrick Laine is going to score a hat trick in every game coming out of the break. Like, I can't tell you that. But if you want to point to one thing, it's that the Jets were a top tier team in November. And a lot of that had to do with Hellebuck playing absolutely lights out and stealing a lot of games. He's going to have to do that for the Jets.
Dave, in the last segment, you talked about Maurice and the style of play and how it's always been sort of defense first mentality.
Especially this year.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. This season, how it's been an emphasis on not pinching at the blue line. Remember, it was always going to be about a tight gap the last few years where the defenseman would be active and you force the guy along the boards and make him make a decision, potentially leaving yourself vulnerable on the back end. And this year, it's always been, don't pinch, step back, everybody step back. The step back method, to your point, Dave, hasn't really worked anymore. It worked in November, largely based on excellent goaltending, but it's not working. Is it time? Is this the bye week? Is this the opportunity for Paul Maurice to reset the Jets' strategy and say, look, our defense is our defense right now. Unless it changes, we know that it's not going to be good enough. Let's try and run and gun it, because playing a defensive shell hasn't helped this team.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to quickly suggest that the one thing that the Jets team is going to benefit from from the break is the fact that they're going to be able to heal their bumps and bruises, because guys were not 100%. So I think that may be able to go a long way. I'm not saying it's going to change everything. It's not going to fix the defensive core, which we'll talk about in a second. But I just think, like, you look at a guy like Blake Wheeler. He blocked a shot in the third period of a game, I can't remember against whom, at home, and went to the bench. And then after that, started taking his, stopped practicing a lot of times with the team. It was taking a lot of maintenance days. So guys like Blake Wheeler, who's one of your horses, you know, wasn't at 100%. So you wonder if giving this opportunity for these guys to heal up a little bit is going to go a long way to the Jets having some success, you know, come the end of the player break and the real kickoff of the final kind of 2 months of the season. Now, I'm inclined to agree with Ezzy. I think it's still going to become largely reliant on Connor Hellebuyck like it has been all season. But yeah, Drew, to the point I made the last segment and the one you just brought up, you know, the Jets have a goal differential of -8 right now. You know, their goals for in the Western Conference, you know, they're middling, right? Like, this is a team who should be, you know, with the guys they have, right? With Mark Scheifele,
the
Blake
top
Wheeler,
six that they have.
Yeah. That's right. So you, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the guys who can put the puck in the back of the net. I just think, like, maybe unleash them a little bit, because right now, you know, it's tough because you're watching this team and you're thinking to yourself, like, are you getting the maximum out of, you know, Patrick Laine? Patrick Laine is, of course, having a very good season, you know, not necessarily from a goal scoring perspective, but if you look at his overall game, the consensus seems to be that everybody's very pleased with the way he is. But, you know, I mean, for Patrick Laine, his shooting percentage, I don't have it right in front of me.
10.4%.
Right. And traditionally, he's probably the
13 to 15%. Yeah.
So
it's not just Patrick Laine. Like,
I know what you're saying, Dave.
Like, it's not just on Laine. It's not just on Mark Scheifele. It's not just on Blake Wheeler. Like, it's not on two players or four players. Mm-hmm. Like, the Jets have got to be better defensively. Like, this team is struggling in most major areas. Like, the power play is good. The penalty kill has definitely been better. Mm-hmm. It's not a top five penalty kill in the league, but at times, you know, it's starting to look like a top half penalty kill, right? But, like, generating high danger chances, like the amount of shots the Jets are giving up, the you know, and there's been a trend, even though the Jets don't take a lot of penalties, you know, you look at the road trip, like, they were taking quite a few penalties, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of things to be concerned about. So there are a lot of areas, what is what I'm saying. And I know you weren't just saying that, you know, Laine can be better or, you know, Scheifele can be better, or one or two players. Like,
the Jets
need to be better as a team. And yes, like, when you talk about systems or, you know, strategies the Jets can change, like, with the defense as it's currently constructed, I don't think, you know, with 30 games left in the season, mm-hmm. you're going to drastically change your team systems and team strategy, right?
Well, like, then I don't think you're going to get any different results. And that's the problem. I mean, I understand what the Jets defense is, and I understand what the personnel grouping is. But if you're not changing something during this bye week where you have an opportunity to make a tweak of some sort, then there's no reason to think that they're going to have better results than they've had over the last 18 games.
The players that they currently have to find a way to win closer games. And that's something that hasn't been talked about enough. Like, how many times have the Jets come back, from a one goal deficit in the third period? Like, how many times have we seen that in the last 2 months?
Not very many.
Like, they have to find ways to win those 3-2, 4-3, 5-4 games. They have to squeak out points. Like, they're going to have to go on a run. One or two wins coming out of the break is not going to handle it. Like, they have to go on a 7-win-in-10-game run, like something like that.
When we come back, Sean Tierney is going to join us. We'll ask him, is a run like that possible, or is this Jets team and the results as of late what we can expect? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pardon me. Jason Bell up next. Sean Tierney at 10 o'clock.
I was thinking myself, sorry, like, did I miss a memo?
No, Jason Bell up next. Sean Tierney at 10 o'clock. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. If you prefer text message, send your your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, later on in this today's program, hour number three, we're going to be taking your calls. We don't do it often, so remember, get your dialing fingers ready. Hour number three, we're going to be taking your calls.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're going to be taking the call now of Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. I guess, though, Jason, you took our call because we called you. Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Tell Kearney to sit down. It's my turn.
Yes.
I thought I was getting bumped like Matt Damon. I'm stuck in the green room or something.
Yes. No, this is not a Kimmel-esque sort of bit. I got my guest confused. Apologies. I was
not a problem.
It was a late night for me. Let's leave it at that. How about that? Jason, how are you? Good to have you on the program on this Saturday morning. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, a Winnipeg Jets team that has been struggling, as has been well documented, one of the worst teams in the league over the last 18 games, over the last 20 games, certainly in the bottom tier of the teams in terms of performance on the ice. I'm not sure if you've been listening to the last 35 or so minutes, Jason, but we've been talking about reasons for optimism in and around our discussion about the Jets' struggles. So from your perspective, what is a reason for optimism for this Winnipeg Jets team?
Well, you know, I kind of go back to the beginning of the season, guys, and the way that they were, right up to that big win against Philadelphia when they win 7-3 and they're like, 20-11 and 2, and you're thinking, wow, I have a lot of optimism to start the season after the exodus of the defenseman that they had, obviously, and no, great additions to the club. I mean, Neil Pionk's been a bit of a revelation, obviously, but you didn't know that at the beginning of the year. So I didn't have a whole lot of optimism at the beginning of the season. And then all of a sudden they're 9 games above 500 and you think, geez, good goaltending and a dynamic top six and a patchwork defense, they're kind of making this work. I mean, but now I think we're all really seeing, the real Winnipeg Jets stand up. And I think this is the problem right now, is that I think we all agree that the team is flawed, that the defense has really, really cost them a lot. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck has done all he can, but he can't play every night. He says his body could play 82 games, but his mind couldn't. And then when he doesn't play, Laurent Brossoit has been, average or below average at best, which of course he wasn't last year. So, and you're right, I don't know how much optimism Winnipeg Jets fans can have when they come out of a, when they're really reeling, then they come out of a break and have to play those 4 games as you suggest. And, when you have to win whatever we think, 20 games in 31, and if you go 1-3 against St. Louis twice, Boston and Nashville, and then all of a sudden you got to win, 26, or you got to win like 19 of 26 or whatever. My math is so terrible, but you get it. I mean, it's just such a terrible stretch to have to come into. So I'm not really sure what kind of great optimism Winnipeg Jets fans should have right now. I kind of take the approach that maybe they should just sit back and enjoy the hockey team and just see what they can accomplish the rest of the way, because I don't see Kevin Cheveldayoff making any major moves to improve this club. I mean, at what cost? I mean, you're going to go out and get a Travis Hamonic, a shutdown guy from Calgary. And what's it going to cost you down the stretch? I mean, if they were going to make a move, it would have to change the makeup of this team. It should have been done during the off season when they knew that they were going to get hit on the blue line. They didn't make it. They didn't move a young scoring forward, which I think I did, and a lot of people thought they should have then. They're not going to do it now. So, I mean, maybe just sit back and enjoy the ride and realize that this is the team you have, and don't make a coaching change, because that's not going to help at this point. And then, reevaluate at the end of the season.
Jay, you just mentioned that you don't see Chevy making any big trades or maybe any trades at all. And I agree with you. I don't know if there's one defenseman or one forward or one player in general that's going to move the needle much for the Jets at this point in the season. But, when you consider that, we're almost exactly a month away from the trade deadline, and the Jets aren't going to make any moves. And, depends on the course that Chevy takes. I should say depends a lot on how the next 2 weeks go after the All-Star break. As you mentioned, those games against Boston, St. Louis, Nashville. But if Chevy isn't going to make any moves, then do you expect the Christian Vesalainens, the Jansen Harkins, the Mason Appletons, the Tucker Pullmans? I mean, those guys have to see a lot of ice, and you almost have to start preparing for next year now.
Well, not yet. I mean, I think we wait and see again what that stretch, you know, I mean, can they come out of this break and miraculously turn it on and play like they did and get the goaltending like they did before and somehow get that defense to tighten up and get those forwards to get, you know, to buy back into that defensive scheme. I mean, David, you were talking about, you know, do the Jets go all in and go all offense? Well, I mean, that would, it changing course now would, I think, would be disastrous. I mean, they're, you know, as far as what their game plan should be. I mean, you're talking about a team that already, with this defense first mentality, already gives up more shots than almost anybody in the National Hockey League. They can rely so heavily on their goaltender. And I mean, shots from the slot in high danger. I mean, we know that we know the metrics. So what are they going to do if they say, let's, you know, defense be damned and we're just going to go for it? I mean, I don't see it happening. I don't think their top six is going to fill the net and start winning 8-7. It just doesn't work. So, you know, go with what kind of got you here up until December 15th at least and see what happens. Kind of roll the dice on the players you have now, because again, I don't see making player moves that will have any great impact when you're probably, I mean, let's be frank. I mean, you're probably, you know, three NHL defensemen short. You've got, I think 10 or 11, you know, pretty good, you know, above average, six or seven above average forwards. And, you know, I think Andrew Kopp's done all he can this season. Obviously, we know that. And the top six is, you know, Rossovic has been up and down. But then it really drops off. I mean, the fourth line, you just shake your head at the fact that they cannot ice a fourth line that can take any pressure off the top nine and eat minutes and maybe score a goal or two. I know Mason Appleton scored the other day, but I think he was actually on the third line at the time. Add no energy whatsoever. I mean, you know, David, I don't think in this NHL you can win with nine forwards. And you watch the Moose all the time, David. And I've had this conversation with Mike McIntyre. I mean, why can't they build a fourth line with an identity that adds energy in it? But, you know, is it totally out of the realm of craziness that Jacy LaPointe plays hockey for this team now? I mean, are they any worse off with LaPointe going out there and throwing his weight around and maybe standing up for a teammate or two? Because, you know, we were told in the fall that this team was going to be built on team toughness. And other than Nathan Boileau standing up for a teammate like 4 months later or whatever it was, there's no pushback. And I think that's part of this team's identity and part of its downfall is that there's no pushback from this team. And that can't be addressed over the course of the bye week break. I mean, that's a mentality that has to change. So there's just a lot of flaws right now that I just don't think that they can correct over the course of 8 days off when they're going into the dog days of the National Hockey League season, where wins are a must, and they just happen to be at a premium this time of year.
So, Jay, you know, going with that idea, and there's a lot of question marks, obviously. So we've got Brian Little skating with the team, but obviously don't know when he's going to come back. Dustin Byfuglien was supposed to be skating 2 weeks ago. You know, the latest reports are he hasn't been on the ice. So you've got those question marks surrounding the team. Obviously, those are very big question marks. To your point, and you don't see them making any major changes, but if this team is somewhat in this similar position, maybe sliding back a little bit, you know, as the trade deadline approaches, do you see this team as a potential to sell off some of their assets to try and, you know, acquire some draft picks? Because as we've been told, this 2020 draft is going to be massive and there's going to be a lot of depth to it. So do you see the Jets making some moves, selling off some assets, and then convert? And the second part of that question would be, how do you sell that to the veterans, the guys who have been told, you know, you're in win now mode?
Well, I mean, again, if they're a point or two from the line, I mean, things could go the other way, David. They could say, look, we're going to try and make a push. We're going to dump a second-round pick next year and maybe a prospect in TJ Cease, or maybe we think Christian Vesalainen isn't going to fit in here. We love our top six for the next 5 or 6 years anyway, and he's not a bottom six guy. Maybe we package him up, and maybe we do get that UFA defenseman to help us out. And maybe they feel like one defenseman and maybe or a second defenseman that might just help, and maybe there's another sort of utility forward that again adds a little bit of that grit down the stretch is going to be able to push them over the playoff line. So I think it's I can't predict, because I don't know what's in, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's mind and what he wants to do. If he thinks he's close to the playoff line, and then you have the mentality that as long as you get in, anything can happen, like the St. Louis Blues model. I don't know if he's going to start selling off. What can you sell off, David, at this point? I mean, what can you sell off? Matthew Perreault hasn't scored in 17. We all like Matthew Perreault as a person and at times as a player, but he's not worth anything right now. Dmitry Kulikov, no team is going to come looking for Dmitry Kulikov as a guy who's going to help them down the stretch. What else is there to sell off? You're not going to sell off draft picks from the 20 draft and the 21 draft, which again, they're telling us, the experts are telling us, are going to be solid drafts. The Jets need those picks. That's gold in the pocket of Kevin Cheveld layoff. So, I haven't answered your question. I don't know. I really don't know what they're going to do. I just don't see a Kevin Hayes, a Paul Stastny scenario where, in this case, they need a top-end blue liner and they sell the farm to get a blue liner, because they're not in a position where they're probably going to go on a great run in the postseason and that guy's going to push them over the edge.
Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Jason, we know that the absence of Dustin Byfuglien threw the team for a loop, and that's completely reasonable. How concerning is it to you that Byfuglien's absence seems to have almost paralyzed the organization this year?
Well, it's just, I don't know. I've tried to figure this out as far as the history of the year, if there's been any parallels. I don't know if there really has been one. I mean, you're talking about, you're going into a season where your number one / number two defenseman, however you rate him and Morrissey, their value and what they do, he just doesn't show up. So now you're missing that massive piece when you know you've already lost Sherrod, Myers, and Jacob Trouba. So that's huge. And you could just tell, I mean, the pall that was sort of cast in those days, and you guys were around the icebox, you know what it was like. It was just like shock. And then when you know it's Dustin Byfuglien, there's no certainty that he's ever coming back. If you had Blake Wheeler's taking a step back or something, you go, Blake will be back. He lives and breathes this game. You know, Dustin's just like, you kind of think, well, he probably wishes he was out bow hunting anyway, right? So you just never knew. And now, but who could have predicted that coming out of the All-Star break, that this is still being held, the club in a lot of sense is being held hostage. And I talked to one of my guys just on Tuesday, and of course there's no date set, and this has now been reported by others, there's no date set for the arbitration. So there doesn't seem to be neither side, and they come together to set a date. There's no rush to get this done, which is mind-boggling. I mean, you think that the Jets need this resolved, and you think that Dustin Byfuglien might want to start making a paycheck. So nobody really quite gets why it's taken this long. But to your point, you're absolutely right. There's no indication that he's been skating. It sounds like the ankle is not responding the way it wants to. Meanwhile, there's this chunk of money that the Jets would like to spend, but they can't because 33 might just knock on the door and say, you know what, I'm ready to come back. So it's a bizarre, bizarre situation, but I just don't know if Dustin Byfuglien will ever again skate in the Winnipeg Jets jersey.
Jay, Tucker Pullman has missed the Jets' last five games, and we expect him to be back shortly after the All-Star break. There's a good chance that it's going to be that game on the 31st against the Boston Bruins. And obviously, of those five games, you know, the Jets have only won one of those games. If you look at the numbers, Tucker Pullman, from an advanced stats point of view, is actually one of the Jets' best defensemen. So is it possible that maybe we've underrated Tucker Pullman? Because when you look at that pair with Morrissey and Pullman, most people would say, you know, that is a step back from last year's top pair of Morrissey and Trouba.
Well, it is a step back because in the East, you start to really see the value of what Jacob Trouba added and how he really made Josh Morrissey a terrific player. But yeah, you know, it's just not the type of a flashy top two that we were used to seeing at this organization, real shutdown. But you're right. I mean, Tucker Pullman's done as much as he possibly can, and he doesn't have a whole lot of experience, and yet he's not flashy, and the only time you really, really, really notice Tucker Pullman is if he's made sort of a ghastly error. And he's got some warts in his game, but he's also a pretty solid, I mean, he thinks the game really, really well, and it frees up Josh Morrissey a little bit more to be offensive, so you're right, I mean, he will definitely not hurt this organization coming back. But that's not the magic elixir to getting through those four tough games to start. And again, it's just it's amazing that so much money caught because if they fall flat and they've already lost four straight. If we're looking at a 1-7 situation in their last eight, man, I just don't like the way that I don't like their chances.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He's one of our favorites on the program. Jason, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of the bye week, and we'll see you at the rink next week.
Take it easy,
Perfect.
Chase.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate this.
Take care, bye. Jason. Thanks again. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets and their recent struggles. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
7-10 more minutes thinking about this game. They need some rest and to recuperate. So there's no video meeting tomorrow. They're gone.
What about thinking about the streak and the situation that it is over this break?
We'll send an email out to them every day to make sure they have no fun on their break. No, I need them to rest and come back. Well, we got Boston, St. Louis, Nashville, St. Louis. So you probably need to get some rest.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Little bit of a snarky response there, but that's okay. The pressure being felt by all members of the Winnipeg Jets organization in the face of the recent struggles. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. Action for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, Drew, you said snarky in reference to Paul Maurice's comments, and it was our good buddy Teddy Wyman who asked the question there. And obviously, you know, Maurice is not happy that they lost the game. They've lost four games in a row, but, you know, he's obviously, you know, being tongue in cheek. But, you know, the funny thing is when you went on your vacation, I was actually emailing you every day and emailing you that I didn't want you to have fun. So it's kind of funny that Paul Maurice said that, you know, in reference to the Jets.
I believe you actually said, extend your vacation and don't come back. I believe that was your official quote, but I didn't take that to heart. That's okay.
It looked like you had a good time. You had your feet up. You were by the pool.
A little bit. Had some nice time. Had some
and I can't believe that your daughter was allowed to fly the plane.
That's true. It's a West, our good friends at WestJet apparently have very lax hiring policies when it comes to their pilots. And they were all too excited to put my daughter right into the pilot seat as we were waiting to take off here in Winnipeg last Friday.
It was a very cute picture.
It was a very cute picture. Yeah. I agree with you there. Let's talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. Sean Tierney going to join us in about 5 minutes time to talk about the Jets from an analytics perspective. And we know those numbers are not going to be favorable. Who or what can you blame for the Jets' recent struggles? I mean, can you blame the coaching staff? Can you blame injuries? Can you blame just a general lack of...
Yes.
No, I mean, you can't... First of all, it's so easy to blame the coaching staff. Like, you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and don't get me wrong, guys. I realize that coaches are hired to be fired. Like, when you look at Paul Maurice and you look at John Cooper, like, there aren't that many coaches that have been with the same team for as long as these guys, 6, 7, 8 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, if you look at Vegas's underlying numbers, I mean, if Marc-Andre Fleury was playing at the same level that you're used to seeing Marc-Andre Fleury, right? Like, a couple of years ago when Vegas went to the Stanley Cup Final, like, Vegas is still a very good team. Like, if there's one team... Or one player, pardon me, coach, that I don't think deserved to be fired. And if you've seen or heard the Golden Knights fans, like, they're not happy that Gerard Gallant was fired. So
very, very little in the NHL will make me say whoa anymore. That one made me say whoa.
Well, it's because, first off, you have players that are underperforming, like William Karlsson, like players like that. I mean, you could throw in like Jonathan Marchessault, like the guys that they've acquired over the last couple of years, like the Mark Stones, the Max Pacioretty's, they're producing at the exact level that you expected. But I think, you know, the defense has been a bit of a question mark, and the goaltending hasn't been as good. Like, Malcolm Subban hasn't been able to come in and, you know, get like 12 or 13 wins like Lauren Brossoit did last year, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. But the point is, I think if you're looking at one area to blame, I think you're going to have a lot of trouble just blaming, you know, just the defense or just the goaltending. Obviously, the goaltending has been the bright spot, Dave. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, where do you want to start? Like,
well,
special teams has not bailed them out at times in games. Like, both the penalty kill and the power play have not been good at times.
I asked the question to Jason last segment about, you know, obviously Bufflin's absence, as I said, threw the team for a loop. But to let it paralyze your team and paralyze your franchise for almost an entire season... You know, if Dustin Bufflin had come into training camp and he'd been and he gets on the ice for his first exhibition game and he blows his knee out and he's out for the year.
Yep.
Which is could have happened just as easily as him not showing up at all. It's you know, injuries happen. Bleep happens and you have to respond to it.
Did you just self bleep?
I did self bleep. And I don't believe that Kevin Cheveldayoff has responded in any real manner.
Okay, but, you know, I agree with you, Drew.
And I think that I don't think he's getting enough of the blame.
I agree with you that the Buff situation... Okay, fair enough. I agree with you that the Buff situation... First off, how many times in the past, guys, have we seen a top four right shot defenseman as dynamic and as offensively gifted as Buff just decide, you know, I don't want to play hockey anymore? Like, I'm just saying this situation was unforeseen and very unique. And I agree with you that maybe Chevy didn't react soon enough, quick enough.
He hasn't reacted.
But my point is that the Jets' right side of the defense was already going to be a question mark with Buff in the lineup, right?
Fine.
Like, Tucker Poolman and Neil Pionk replaced Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, right?
Yeah.
On the right side.
Yeah.
So the Jets were already going to be, from a talent and skill point of view, the Jets were already going to have a worse defense this year than they did last year. Like, if you compare Pionk and Poolman, just based on their hit, like, Pionk's only played 2 years in the NHL. This is Poolman's first full year in the NHL. Just based on experience and skill, you would say that Trouba and Myers are better. So what I'm saying is that, yes, I agree with you that the Buff situation did really hurt the Jets, and they haven't been able to, I think, make up for that with waiver wire pickups. Like, the guys they've acquired, like the Carl Dahlstroms, the Lucas Abizas, like these types, Anthony Boteto
was acquired.
Yeah, and it was working in November, but that was only 15 games. Like,
and it was working based on the fact that Connor Hellebuck was out of this world.
Right. So I would say that the biggest problem, if you really want to simplify it, the Jets have really only had two good scoring lines this year. And if Connor Hellebuck is not giving them a 920, 925 save percentage average, then the Jets are struggling. The penalty kill has been bad. The defense, I would say, is probably bottom 10 in the NHL, maybe even bottom 5. Like, just from a talent perspective, like, Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, to me, are the Jets' most talented defensemen. And after that, the drop-off is huge. Like Tucker Poolman, to me, all day can be a top-pair guy. He can be a top-four guy. But when you're talking about Kulikov, Sabiza, Boteto, Dahlstrom, Beaulieu, these are all third-pairing defensemen at best. No disrespect to them. So you have, and we talked to Murat Itessa about this last week. Like, he was saying, like, so many defensemen for the Jets have been playing above where they should be playing. So, yes, the defense is the big problem with the Jets and has been probably their biggest weakness, but it's not the only weakness.
When we come back, Sean Tierney is going to join us to talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuch and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us in the studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve if you prefer text messages. Messaging, that's also an option. Send your text to 129090, where standard messaging rates will apply. And of course, remember, coming up in the third hour today, we don't do it often, we're going to be taking your calls. So get your takes ready. The hotter, the better.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Charting Hockey, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Sean Tierney. Sean joins us to talk about the Winnipeg Jets and from a more of an analytical point of view, looking at some of the underlying numbers of this Jets team that has been struggling as of late. Sean, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Sean. Obviously, we know, and I think most Jets fans know, that the numbers are pretty horrific. They might actually be more painful to look at than the Jets' recent record over the last 18 games of 5-11-2. And we'll get into that, and we'll delve deep into that over the next, you know, 10 or so minutes. But I want to start on a positive. I want you to tell me one reason why Jets fans should take a positive out of some of their underlying numbers.
Well, that's a tricky task to go right off the top. I think one question that maybe I had coming into the season was Connor Hellebuck, who didn't have a great season last year in terms of some of the underlying numbers we like to look at, like goal saved above expectation, where you look at the shot quality of the goalies facing and then how they've performed based on the workload? And Hellebuck kind of just broke even last year, just sort of performing the way you'd expect maybe an average goalie to perform in his role. And he's morphed back into that top-end NHL goalie that I think Winnipeg Jets fans know he really is underneath. He's been the NHL's best overall when you look at that goal saved above expectation this year. I've had him as the Vezina favorite for months and months now. And although there's some really, you know, horrific, as you said, numbers maybe underneath what the Jets are doing this season with the blue line the way it is and on, Hellebuck's really risen to the challenge this year and has carried the team. So I think if there's one really positive spot, that's where you have to start, that they've got the goaltending to sort of hold things together while there's, you know, questions in other spots on the roster.
Now, Sean, we got to talk about the shot rates. Anybody who follows you on Twitter, and obviously all three of us here in the studio do, the Jets are very lonely there in the bottom left quadrant. They're not looking too good when it comes to shot rates. And when you consider the amount of skilled players the Jets have, you're talking, you know, the Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, Connor, Wheeler. Is it difficult to understand why the Jets fail to generate so few high danger chances?
It really is almost logic defying trying to understand how such a high powered offensive team could sort of regress into this sort of a shell that they seem to be playing in this season. I think when I try to explain it, you look at the quality of the defense, losing Bufflin the way they did heading into the season was a surprise on a defense group that was already, you know, not projected to be a really strong defense group overall. Maybe that's something we can say in coaching tactics where Maurice has decided that, you know, playing a shell, really protecting the house, not taking too many chances was something that the team maybe needed to do in order to compete. But it's really, it's almost a sin to look at just how deep offensively this group is and then to compare it to, you know, the almost zero quality that they generate for themselves. And so like you said, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen them in the bottom left of every graph I have basically at the team level. They generate the lowest quality in the league. And it's really just, it's almost awe-inspiring that a team this high-powered could do that. They get less than two expected goals per game at even strength. That's lower than Buffalo. That's lower than the Detroit Red Wings, who are, you know, purposely tanking. And it really doesn't make any sense. I think the comparable for this team ultimately is probably the Toronto Maple Leafs, as maybe hard as that is to hear in Winnipeg. But it's a high-powered offense, a defense with some questions, and then great goaltending. And so I think ultimately, you know, you want to see this high-powered offense unleashed rather than regress into the shell. But that's how they've played so far.
You know, Sean, you talk about expected goals. And according to Evolving Hockey, the Jets' expected goal share is 37.4% since Christmas. So obviously not very good. But what specifically does it tell us about the quality of this team?
Right. Well, it tells us a really worrying thing, which is, so it's the lowest in the NHL, and they bottomed out to almost 30% for a stretch right in sort of the middle of January, and they've kind of popped back up over the past couple of weeks to about 45%, which, you know, is nothing to write home about, but at least they've trended back up from the black hole that they slipped into. But what it tells us is that while they seem to have put a focus on preventing chances against and maybe sacrificing offensive opportunities to ensure that defense was taken care of first, they're not succeeding on either count. They're giving up a ton of quality against and still not getting anything for themselves. And so, you know, a team trading in the 30% is something that we just haven't seen over a full season from almost any team save the tanking Sabres from a couple of seasons ago. And there's really no excuse for a team this good to drop into that kind of level. And I think we're finally starting to see the results don't work over time. This isn't the way that a team like this ultimately has success. And maybe that's something in the back half of the season the team will say, you know, we need to pump back towards the offense and take our chances and trust Hellebuck and see if we can tick that expected goal share back up, because it's been just unsustainably bad so far.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Sean Tierney. You know Sean from his work on Twitter at Charting Hockey, and of course his website chartinghockey.ca. You know, Sean, you talked about, you know, the numbers, and you know, we've talked about, I think a few weeks ago we talked about the penalty kill for the Jets as being historically bad. The goal share of 37.4% since Christmas. Can you give us some sort of historical precedent to other sort of, you know, legendarily bad teams as of late. We remember the Colorado Avalanche from a few years ago before they obviously turned their franchise around, you know, and they were, what would they finish the year with, 48 points, something like that. You know, what was their goal share like a number of years ago? Or, you know, you might not know the exact number off the top of your head, but they, in terms of historical context, how, what are we talking about with the Jets?
Right. So I think we're talking about as bad as we've seen. And the comparable that comes to mind, the place that no team ultimately goes, is that couple of years of the tanking Sabres, where they were trying to get the number one overall pick for 2 years in a row. They, you know, evacuated any semblance of talent from the roster, and they really committed to their lottery pick. And so they got into some depths that we just haven't seen since. In a half season of data, we get a little bit of sort of interesting data points where over the course of a season, you know that this will get more towards a normal number. But the Rangers and the Jets have been sort of the two big outliers this year in terms of giving up just sort of unsustainably high levels of quality against. The Rangers were right around 3 expected goals against at even strength per 60 minutes for a while. And that would be the worst that we've seen in the entire sort of history of modern stats that we have. And the Jets were hanging right with them. So in terms of historical context, their defense is as bad as we've seen since 2007, 2008, when we first started having access to shots data. So about as bad as we've seen so far. I'm not sure if it's something that they really can keep up with another 30 games of sample coming. I think we'll see them regress. There's too much talent on this roster to stay at this level. But yeah, in terms of historical context, about as bad as we've seen.
Sean, we've talked to you about goals above replacement before on the show, and I think you'd agree that it's one of the more valuable statistics that you have, either from a individual perspective or a team perspective. And on your Twitter account, you posted the defenseman, and you gave a shout out to Tucker Poolman, who's obviously out of the lineup right now. We expect him to be back shortly. It might even be the Jets' first game after the All-Star and player break, but he actually ranked highest on the Jets. The lowest defensemen were Lucas Sabiza and Sammy Niku. Not a big surprise when it comes to Lucas Sabiza, but Sammy Niku, I think there are a lot of Jets fans that are really optimistic about his ceiling. So overall, what does this stat, this goals above replacement stat, tell us kind of about the overall quality of the Jets defense?
Yeah, so when we're talking about goals above replacement, it's, you know, it's a heavy stat to understand, but basically you can take all the contributions a player makes when they're on the ice, and it lets us isolate what that player was responsible for. You play with lots of different defense partners and line mates, and this helps us to kind of distill just what your impact was overall, positive and negative. And I think Tucker Poolman has been a really pleasant surprise on a defensive group that really needed some positive surprises if they were going to hang tight. Right now, going into the break, he was at about 4.4 goals above replacement, a definite positive and a player worthy of top 4 minutes when you're producing like that, especially given the state of the blue line overall. So that was really encouraging. The interesting thing is, as you go down the list, you get Betetto as second place, and that includes total bottoming out before he headed into the All-Star break, where all of the decent work he had been doing just dropped right off the map, and he was almost falling off the bottom of player over time charts that I have that show your share of expected goals. He really just seemed to hit a wall going into the break, but he still is second on the team, and that speaks to, I don't know, a little bit of Betetto maybe being better than I thought he would have been, but also the fact that when you expose players like this to heavy minutes over time, they're going to hit a wall. And I think if the Jets are really serious about trying to hang around the playoff picture and maybe get in and maybe even, you know, not get blown out in the first round, it's pretty clear that something's going to happen on defense. They need someone who can come in and log minutes reliably, because you just can't be a playoff team that has Poolman and Betetto as your top two in overall impact.
You know, Sean, you recently posted the 5-game rolling averages for PDO, the sum of a team's shooting percentage and its save percentage, and the Jets do not do well here. Why is this such an important team stat, and how can this stat improve for the Jets?
Right, so when we look at this, PDO is really interesting because it's ultimately out of a team's control. And so at the team level, we expect that your shooting percentage and your save percentage will always come back to the league averages. Individual players won't, but as a team, you will. And so when the Jets were really sort of picking up steam early December, they were in a PDO spike where their save and shooting percentage were at the top of the league. And that's a warning sign when you see that this is a team that's getting really lucky. They're getting lots of puck luck. All the bounces are going the right way. And they're really, you know, enjoying results beyond what we would expect based on their underlying work. Since that December 1st point, it almost looks like a roller coaster where they've gone from the top PDO in the NHL, saves and shooting percentage, to the very worst as we headed into the break, right at the bottom of the league. And that's been reflected in the standings too. Ultimately, this is kind of odd, but it's a positive sign for Jets fans that they weren't going to stay as positively lucky as they were in early December, but they won't stay this bad either. They'll regress. Shots and saves will come back up to average as a team, and the results will level out a little bit more. But, you know, it's a really almost horrifying look. It looks like a roller coaster dropping off a mountain almost, that they went from such great luck to the absolute worst luck. And ultimately, they'll regress to average, and they'll see some better results playing the way they are going forward.
Sean Tierney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow Sean's work at chartinghockey.ca and online on Twitter, at Charting Hockey. We strongly recommend you do so. Some great insight into some of the numbers, especially for your Winnipeg Jets. Sean, final question for you. You know, barring a roster injection of a top four defenseman, is there any reason to believe that the Jets can sort of flip their fortunes and get back to being a playoff team this season?
Well, as we head into the break, I have them projected for 88 points in the standings. I had them at 92 heading into the year, and they've fallen back a couple of wins to about 88. So, you know, the West isn't a strong conference overall this year. The Pacific's a real mess. So, you know, competing in the Central, they're really only looking at maybe sneaking a couple of wins beyond what I expect to get themselves into that picture. I think maybe the most hopeful thing, and I'll end on this hopeful note, is if there was one thing I was going to hope for a team going into the playoffs, it's a goaltender. And the Jets have that this year. They have the league's best. And teams have gone on long runs on the back of great goaltending. Hellebuck has been that kind of a goaltender, and Brassois has been totally playable as his backup again this year too. And so if the Jets have any hope without some sort of unforeseen trade, it's that Hellebuck can continue to hold the fort, and that maybe some of this elite offense they have is unleashed by Maurice going forward. That combination should sneak them into the playoffs, but, you know, ultimately it doesn't forecast to be a super long run into the playoffs, but maybe a playoffs berth if Hellebuck can keep it up over the back half.
Sean Tierney covers the analytical side of the game of hockey. Sean, we always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the program.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. When we come back, more Winnipeg Jets conversation. We'll talk about what Sean had to say regarding the Jets. And, of course, your calls coming up in hour number three. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I think I think this group has given everything. I mean, I don't know if before the season I anticipated the type of fight that this team showed and to be as competitive as we've been. Pretty proud of that, and I think it's time to figure some things out. We got 8 days to decide what type of push we want to make and what type of team we want to have going forward.
Blake Wheeler from earlier in the week before the bye week started, talking about the 8 day break and then the final 31 game push as the Jets will look to rebound and get back into a playoff spot. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. You know, Mike McIntyre, a good buddy from the Winnipeg Free Press, sort of wrote a column based on Wheeler's comments, or alluding to Wheeler's comments, where he said it's sort of a, you know, for lack of a better term, I'll use this term, Mike didn't, a shot across the bow of Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff saying, you know, you've got to do something. You've got to provide us with reinforcements if you want us to have a chance to be a playoff team. Do you take those comments the same way that Mike wrote about, or do you think that these are, that might be reading a little bit too much into Wheeler's comments there?
Is the bow the front of the boat or the back of the boat?
I think that is the front of the boat and the stern is the back of the boat, if I'm not mistaken.
Because you said shot across the bow.
Well, that's the term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always forget which is the front and which is the back. I always remember where the poop deck is, though.
Dave, now that I can ignore him for the rest of the segment.
As his mic has been cut off.
What do you think about Wheeler's comments there? Is that him saying, get us help? And Mike also wrote in his column that Maurice also sort of said something to that effect of get us help. We've got all we can get out of Spezza, and we've got all we can get out of Boteto, and we've got all we can get out of Kulikov, and we need something to give us a boost to get us back into a playoff spot and a playoff chances.
You know, the interesting thing I think that's worth noting is the fact that we don't know the kind of conversations, and I hate using that word, especially in reference to Kevin Cheveldayoff, because he references us that quite often. But we don't know the kind of conversations that he's having with Paul Maurice, and we don't know the kind of conversations he's having with Blake Wheeler. So, again, I wonder if they're fully appraised as to what is going on with this team and kind of the direction, because, you know, you could interpret it that way, for sure. But, I mean, again, I look at it and I think to myself, well, what is one player going to do? What is two players going to do? And you look at it and you think to yourself, okay, from a Blake Wheeler perspective, he doesn't care. And I said this last week. I'm not saying he doesn't care about the Winnipeg Jets long term, but Blake Wheeler wants to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And Blake Wheeler wants to win a Stanley Cup either this year or next year, or, you know, that window,
yeah,
that window.
Signed a 5-year contract extension.
That's right. So that proverbial window that has been talked about with regards to the Winnipeg Jets. So that's what he's talking about. That's what he's interested in. He's not going to be interested in he's not going to be interested in the 2020 draft and how deep it is.
Yeah.
So don't ask Blake Wheeler about, that's happened before. And I can tell you, he doesn't care.
He's got a 5-year window.
But the point is, that's right. So yeah, I'm sure he is saying, you know, we would like something augmented. But again, you look at this team and you're thinking to yourself, is one piece, a Travis Hamonic, for example, is that going to be sufficient to somehow lift the fortunes of the Winnipeg Jets? You know, you look Brian Little potentially coming back. Well, now suddenly Little comes back as your third line center. Adam Lowry is your fourth line center. Well, now you've got some depth. But is that enough? So it's an interesting situation because you have to look at it. And we talked about it on last week's show as about that Jets defense, what it'll look like next year. It's going to be young. But it's going to be way more talented.
Yeah, you're going to have Ville Heinola for sure,
Adam,
right?
You know, Dylan Sandberg.
You'll probably have Dylan Sandberg, even though there is a belief maybe that he isn't going to sign with the Jets, but that's all speculation at this point. But right now, you're going to have, at the very least, Ville Heinola, and he was very impressive early this season, right? Like, nobody expected him to make the team. So to get back to what you were saying, though, Drew, you know, like, Dave talks about, you know, it would really help to get Brian Little back, right? And I agree with you, and we don't know when he's going to come back. Mm-hmm. He started skating more with the team.
That's right.
And I think, you know, Tucker Poolman's absence has really hurt the Jets. Now, I know injuries are always difficult to talk about because all teams are dealing with injuries. Like, look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they managed to stay in a playoff spot without Sidney Crosby, right? Their best player. But they happen to also have Evgeny Malkin, and obviously, you know, Tristan Jarry and Matt Murray have been really good in net. But the point is, you could pick 10 to 15 teams around the NHL that have been decimated with injuries. But really, Tucker Poolman going down and Adam Lowry going down right now has really hurt them because they don't have that depth on defense or up the middle on that third line. So, you know, getting back to Blake Wheeler's comments, and I know Dave knows this, it's not just Blake Wheeler. I mean, Mark Scheifele wants to win now. Nikolaj Ehlers wants to win now. Patrick Laine is used to winning. Like, it doesn't matter if you're talking about the 21-year-olds or, you know, the 31-year-olds on this team.
Mm-hmm.
These guys want to win, and they all do. I mean, Mason Appleton, Jansen Arkins, everybody wants to win now. Nobody's thinking about, well, you know, if we don't make the playoffs, at least we'll get a pretty good draft pick. I agree with Dave. So even though it looks dire right now, it really starts with really tough games coming out of the break. And I know I mentioned it last hour, but you have to put together a nice streak where you win seven or eight of 10 games, because playing 500 hockey, Drew, is not going to cut it. Not only is 500 hockey not going to cut it, they can't win 55% of their games. Like, they're going to have to go something like 19-10-2. Like, they're going to have to get points in 20 or 21 of 31 games. Like, and so that's going to require some winning streaks, right? Like, that's going to require 4 or 5 game winning streaks. Now, we can sit here all day and debate that, right? I do think the Jets have it in them because their schedule gets easier in the month of February when you start to play, you know, the Ottawa Senators and New York Rangers and San Jose Sharks, teams like that. But it's going to be tough. Like, they have a big mountain to climb.
One thing I want to make note of before we go to break quickly, because we hear a lot of talk about, well, the Jets can't make a move because they're paralyzed, they're hamstrung by the Dustin Byfuglien contract, and what if he comes back and blah, blah, blah. Jets' current cap space today is $13.6 million.
So they can take Byfuglien back and still...
You can take Byfuglien back. By the way, he's not coming back. That's my opinion. He's not coming back this year anyways. So you got $13.6 million of cap space. So you have cap space.
And some of that is obviously Brian Little's, right?
No, not LTIR. Little is not on LTIR.
Oh, so we're not factoring that in.
Okay. No, we're not. That's not a factor whatsoever because he's not on LTIR. It's a simple fact that every day in the NHL, that if you have a dollar of cap space today, that dollar doesn't become just another dollar tomorrow. It's banked. It becomes $2 tomorrow on day two of the year. And it becomes $3 on the third day of the year.
So the Jets do have cap space, but it goes back to what we're talking about, though, Drew. Do the Jets want to use that cap space? Like, it depends on where they're going to be February 15th, February 20th. Like, are they going to be buyers or sellers, or are they going to be neither?
Well, I mean, I can tell you one thing's for sure, that Blake Wheeler wants them to be a buyer, and Mark Scheifele wants them to be a buyer, and Paul Maurice, you know, for all the criticisms he gets, rightly or wrongly, and I think a lot of the criticism he gets for his coaching job is to some extent justified, he's also saying, look, I've done what I can with the roster you've given me. Give me better players, and now it's time for Kevin Cheveldayoff to either say yes or no and punt on the year, or try and give him a push into the playoffs. Time will tell. When we come back, Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine is going to join us to talk about goaltending around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.